Blog Talk Radio.
Life, growth, and wellness.
Show, and I am Sandy Rogers, and it is my extreme pleasure to serve as your hostess this evening. You know, Tuesdays is like my favorite day of the week, so I get all these Christmases in the year, right? Every Tuesday is my Christmas because I get so excited. I have the world's best experts in their fields that grace the stage with us every Tuesday. And so, of course, tonight is no difference, and we have some exceptional guests that I know will fill you full of inspiration and provide a lot of good news and perhaps new information to you. So we're going to bring them on shortly, but, you know, there's a couple of things that we always do to get ourselves grounded in order to receive our message from today. So first and foremost, we give thanks to our ancestors, to all the ancestors, for being with us at all times and always, and especially on Tuesdays, as we sometimes have a tendency to discuss issues that are not ordinarily, right, ordinarily talked about in an open setting. They may be whispered in a corner, but not openly. And so we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors for strength that give us the courage to be able to do that. And we trust that our ancestors got our backs, our fronts, our tops, and our bottoms as we move forward. So ancestors, we love you. We love you now, and we love you forever. Ashe, 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 oh. The next thing we do is we anchor ourselves in positive energy. I call it affirmative readings. And these are pieces that I've written, and you can find them if you're interested at revsandy.wordpress.com. They're automatically delivered to your email if, in fact, you would like to subscribe to that service. So this particular message is called Holy Justice. Have you ever thought to yourself about getting even with someone for something that has happened? Not you? Well, think about somebody else whom you have seen do this. Does that person ever get even? And who's judging the outcome? So our human bodies are at their ultimate healthy state when in perfect peace and harmony. However, when we allow ourselves to hold on to negative emotions, we create sickness in our bodies. Negative emotions can appear as headaches, stomach aches, high blood pressure, or any other unhealthy state of being. Holy justice is accepting you do not have to do anything but live a life free of hate, greed, injustice, or any other negativity. Holy justice implies that a higher source will and can handle all that is done unjustly to you. Holy justice means trusting that it is handled by a force stronger than you. Holy justice means God is always in control. Holy justice means that you are not required to do any fighting to vindicate yourself. Holy justice is always at work. Again, that's RevSandy.wordpress.com. If you're interested in reading any of those on a daily basis or just going to check what I've had to say. So you know it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is simply called Let's Build a New Reality, and we have the power team, a powerful couple with Kwabena and his wife Tanya that's going to be coming and talking to us about urban agriculture. I almost said just agriculture, but it's actually urban agriculture, and that may have a new meaning for you once you hear them explain the work that they're doing and exactly what that means. So, audience, you know you're invited to join in the discussion. All comments are welcome, and our attempt is to hear every voice that wants to be heard. The call-in number here is 516-531-9819, and you push 1 on your dial to alert me you want to speak live on air with us. Now, some of our listeners do not stay up this late at night, and they listen to the show at a different time. So the only thing I would ask of you is to ensure that we have a high sound quality for their feedbacks, is that you please mute your phone when you're not speaking once you've been added to the show. I normally do not disconnect you from the show, so if you would just do that. But if there's any noise in the background, then I would have to do that just to protect the sound quality. And again, if you want to listen to any of the shows, if you want to listen to the rebroadcast of tonight, you simply go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers. That's SandyRogers. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I'm going to take a quick music break, and when we return, we're going to bring on this incredible couple that's going to talk to us about building a new reality and figure out exactly what they mean by that, okay? We'll be right back, you guys.
It's like you're looking through a telescope. You see where you're going to be. Growing, getting better. You're not the person they see. Can't be mad at the things you've been through, because they built your love. You're stronger than you've ever been. They can't stop your hurting. Your faith ain't never small. That's what brought you this far. Oh, yeah. See, you got your dreams and you got your prayers and you got your God. He gon' take you there. See, everybody has a season.
first I was very married. And you know, you guys, I was thinking to play another song, and then the words to this song just kept repeating over and over in my head. So I'm like, okay, well, this must be it. So that's what we got. Go Get It with Mary Mary. And welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And it is my pleasure to bring to you Kwabena and his wife, Tanya. And I wanted to just give you a little information about this couple before I bring them to the mic and allow them to really educate us tonight on what they're doing in the world. So this couple have birthed into existence actually four different companies or four different corporations. They have the North America Food and Farm. They have the Atlanta Food and Farm. Purpose-Built Schools is who they are associated with, I believe. And I really need to get clarification on that. And I know that now they're working with the Thomasville Heights Elementary School as educators over there. And they come excited and they're eager to share their philosophy with us tonight. They urge us to build our local economy based upon urban agriculture. It's a great concept. I just absolutely find it admirable. And they teach all around the world the importance of sustainable environment and learning to grow your own food source. They never seem to tire of doing this work. I'm telling you, man, look, I be watching them every day. I'm like, oh, y'all don't never go to sleep, right? They offer assistance to local community gardens, which they have done at my community garden, the historic Mapleton Garden. And I believe that that may be where we first met. And then they also work with larger units that require help. And they do what they do, and I call it community building, because that is the work of building a community, especially from the food source up to being sustainable. So it is my honor and my pleasure to bring to the microphone Kwabena and Tanya. Thank you guys for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Sandy. Hello, everybody.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for having us. Hello, everyone.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited. I'm so serious, though. You know, like every time I look up, you guys are at a different location. It seems like helping people, teaching people. So what motivates you to do what you do?
Yeah, it's going to be a nice game to see whether we can know when each of us is going to start speaking before the other. We both can share a lot of information, but I just wanted to comment a little bit, Sandy. I know it's just, you know, part of language to choose which order to introduce people, but I'm certainly it could have equally been Tanya and Crummel Stevenson with her husband Kwabena as the introduction tonight. We are a team, and we both come to this with amazing strengths and lots of experiences in each of our lives, very different experiences that have melded together in this incredible partnership that is really only about a year young since we got married last October, even though we've known each other for many years. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here as Tanya's husband tonight.
And Kwabena is so generous with honoring his wife. I had a question for them earlier, and Kwabena quickly let me know that his wife has suggested to appear in a certain manner, and I said she's a very wise woman, and so I would like to acknowledge that too, and thank you for acknowledging your queen in such a high state, Kwabena. That is superb.
I see. Well deserved. So we'll just step back to your question more directly. We've been given a lot. You know, everybody's life is different, you know, and both of us have been blessed with really amazing parent and a very supportive start in life. And those gifts, you know, we felt were a blessing, and we feel very obligated to share. And so the high energy and activity you see is really just driven by that sense of gratitude, you know, for the universe, mm-hmm. for our family, our community, our schools, our teachers, our health. I mean, we're healthy. We every day we touch our bodies and say, hey, they're still working perfectly, you know. And it's a great thing when there's so much sickness and challenges around us, to have strength, to have energy, to have capacity to give. What else would we be doing with what we have then, other than sharing it, as far as we're concerned? And so that's really what pushes us out the door every day. And we just love being with people. Tanya loves interacting with folks. And I love making a difference in the world. I'm a social engineer. I love to see things change for the better. And so the combination of things really puts us out there.
Well, thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Tanya?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, thanks again. Thank you, Kravina, for that. And, yes, as Kravina mentioned, I love hearing other people's stories. So, you know, doing this work and, you know, having a component such as food and growing food allows for, you know, me to be able to initiate conversations around, you know, people's stories and life stories. And I've just learned so much and, you know, been able to meet all sorts of different personalities and people around, you know, just the conversation around food. And so the fact that we get to do this sort of thing in a communal sort of fashion, bringing people together with this one, you know, one thing that we all share as humans is the food. You know, most of us, you know, live off of food. And so being able to share this with each person, or, you know, even from when we start growing the food from seed, that knowing that this is going to someone's family or, you know, home to feed a group or wherever the food ends up, that, you know, being able to create those stories and then hear these stories, you know, when people come back to tell us about the food or how they used it and just those sorts of things. So I'm really excited that, you know, that definitely since I connected with Kravina around learning all those sorts of components.
So are you relatively new, Tanya, in this arena or?
Yes, absolutely. So within the last year, I've been working for North America Food and Farm. So I've learned more of the agricultural skills that I have. Over this past year. So yes, relatively new to growing food, but you know, definitely have different stories around, you know, my, you know, relationships and history around food.
Okay, great. So thank you for sharing.
Sure.
And that's the great, as Tanya was saying, that's the great utility of food, is it's a common denominator that unites us all as humans, right? And so even if people are not deep experts in any area of the food system, you know, you have a heritage by the very nature of you, you know, being a human being, right? And so it's just a matter of tapping into that in one way or another. Oftentimes there are agricultural roots that we're not aware of or may have even forgotten, you know, or suppressed in the case of Black people. Sometimes we have traumatic relationships with food and agriculture because of, sharecropping and even morphogenetic memories of enslavement and forced labor relationship to agriculture. So, you know, just becoming aware and in tune with your heritage around food is a start on this journey. And then, you know, ideally you would get into becoming in control of your food and therefore more sovereign in your life as a human.
So, Kravina, is that an area that people are willing to acknowledge and work with or work to improve their acceptance or, you know, the whole plantation type of working in the fields mentality?
Yeah, it's a complex thing. You know, it. I think a lot of it lies around generation. You know, so if you have our elders who have direct experiences with trauma on the land, then, yeah, it can be really difficult. You know, a lot of folks fled the South and fled farm, you know, for a better life because they were trapped on those farms through oppressive systems. And so it requires a compassion and empathy when we show up as enthusiasts for this food movement and people are hesitant or even look down on it because they have been taught to associate it with something painful or that's been part of their experience, right? So that's one area. And then there are young people who are enamored with technology and other parts of modernity and may not be inclined automatically. But actually, you know, on one side, there's a huge swath of young people who are very enthusiastic about this movement. And to some combination of hip-hop culture and self-definition culture is being blended with the food movement, particularly among young black folks, that is really beautiful to see, where they are feeling and, you know, expressing their resistance to oppressive systems in the world through pursuing a relationship with the land and getting back in control of their primary method of survival, you know. And so, yeah, it's across the whole board, but I think general, it's an ongoing educational process and an experiential journey where we begin to associate agriculture with joy, pleasure, gain, you know, like, you know, get, you know, we have to gain from it, right? Like, how is it improving our lives is something that has to be a new and pattern made on our psyche, again, from when people were taking our labor and not allowing us to benefit from it.
Right. Well, you bring up a very interesting dynamic there, one that I really hadn't thought about in as far as the younger generation and how they're adapting to and taking ownership of the food movement, you know, and that they can they see a benefit for themselves in it. Because I was going to ask, in a relationship to the lockdown that we had for the last year and a half, do you see that making a difference on the community as far as the acceptance of, you know, embracing that whole process or that whole mental thought around growing their own food?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Tanya and I first started selling at the Lithonia Farmers Market, for instance, which is one of the markets we sell out in DeKalb County, Georgia, which is east of the Metro Atlanta area. Last year experienced exponential growth at that market, and the market manager, Charlie Anderson, who we were just talking to last week, was very adamant, certain that had to do with people being locked in, you know, during the pandemic and not really having many outlets to go to. And so they were showing up at the market for a social outlet as well as to get food for themselves. And then, yeah, and then the data coming back from nurseries and feed stores that, you know, supply the different equipment, you know, your Home Depots, your Lowe's, and the other places, they have experienced incredible sales increases over the past few, you know, year and a half or so during this health crisis, where people are finally becoming more conscious of how vulnerable our food system is to any type of societal shocks, right? And so, yeah, we definitely have seen a spike.
Okay. And Tanya, as you're hearing and sharing other people's stories, are there any central themes in what they're saying around accepting and embracing growing their own food?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, there's several things that that I'm hearing, more and more, which are people having, as Kwabena mentioned, accessibility to food during times such as, the pandemics or any of those sorts of things where, your access to certain resources. And again, this goes back to all of our need for food, it's a staple in all of our lives. But having accessibility to your food, so that is a recurring theme. And then people wanting to know the source of their food these days, more folks seem to be more people wanting to know where their food is coming from, how and where it was grown, and taking more control of their health and dietary needs and things like that. So, having what we call this urban agricultural model in our communities. Is that folks can, have accessibility to food within a certain mileage of where they live. So, folks know the source, they know the farmers, they know where the food is coming from in their communities, just being able to have access to it, or grow it yourself. So, those two topics for sure have been reoccurring themes definitely post, pandemic or whatever have you. That I'm hearing from, different people and really wanting, to have more control around their food source and wanting to learn more about, just growing food. I mean, it's an interesting concept and dynamic to be able to take a seed and put it into soil and, see it come into something that you can consume.
Oh, I agree so much with that whole process. I'm pretty new to the gardening component on a regular basis. I think I kind of dibble and dabbled when I lived in California for a while, but being here in Georgia the last 4 years, I think, I've been over at the historic Mapleton Community Garden, and they're like the growing season now. I've got to go by every day just to say hello to my baby.
Wow, yes, of course.
They're putting that seed in the ground, like you said. They're such a connection to your food. That's what it is, this connection. There's love that you're pouring in as it's coming up,
sure.
It's producing the fruit of your labors. And I can certainly see where people would be excited about that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then wellness, is another, component that folks are really, wanting to have more control over in their lives. So, this, like you said, creates a whole wellness space around growing food and putting nutrition into your body, and then just the full circle of, life, so to speak, for us that we know of.
Yeah.
But I would like, I would be remiss in not being really transparent, though, and honest, Sister Sandy, is that I'm actually not driven as much about the health benefits and the wellness about food in my work. I acknowledge it, I celebrate it, I embrace it, but I was really originally driven by the empowerment aspects of growing your own food. Just to share a little bit about the organization that we work through and how I got, and get it started. North America Food and Farm is a social enterprise for-profit consulting firm, right? And so we are structured, the entire name of the company is North America Food and Farm PBC Inc., and the PBC stands for Public Benefit Corporation, which is a particular type of corporation that's designed to benefit the public in some way, as it's sort of self-explanatory says. Other companies that are structured this way that people may be familiar with are like Ben & Jerry's, for instance, or Patagonia Outdoor Equipment Company. And these are companies that people have seen give back to the community in terms of finances, money, and things like that, or just to behave differently than your typical capitalist corporation. And we wanted to signal that by the way we designed the company. But the way we envision our giving back is to create wealth in communities that have been marginalized traditionally, and most obviously Black communities, but really just all communities that we can touch. And that's what North America Food and Farm is really about, empowering people with a tool to develop wealth for their families, for themselves as individuals, if they're entrepreneurs or they want to make a living through this work. And then we do entire communities, and we are looking to work with cities and counties and whole states if we can, which is why the company is called North America Food and Farm. We started, the prototype company was Atlanta Food and Farm in 2011, and in 2015 I had the idea of taking the successes that we experienced in Atlanta and replicating it into other cities across the continent. So it's not just the United States, which is just one part of America, right? So we work in Canada, Mexico, all U.S. territories, and we intend to move further beyond that once we feel like we've reached, you know, a level of success with our current target demographic. But we really believe this work is applicable everywhere. We want to try to make proof of concept in other cities that we're working in: Birmingham, Boston, Tallahassee, Houston, Texas, Denver, and Portland, Oregon, just really all across the country where we have connections and opportunities to make a difference. But I would just, you know, I was launched into this work out of ideology. You know, I didn't have an epiphany with the land or anything like that. It was through my study of what it took to liberate Black people. I'm a Black nationalist, so that's my heritage in terms of how I see the world, my worldview. I'm a Pan-Africanist. And I just chose to work in food because an elder told me and directed me that this would be the way to have the most impact on the welfare of my folks. And in my journey in going deeper into food, it took me into a space of more about, you know, the science of how to make it a liberation tool. And in some ways, it kind of got stripped of race, you know, as a motivating factor, because it became this more transcendent question of what does the planet need for a more just society, right? So my folks' struggle is still up in there, but I'm now, like, taking responsibility for the entire planet, you know, as a king, as a god, you know, as a god element on this surface, on this earth. What is my obligation to steer the civilization further toward the direction that it needs for its own welfare and to provide a resistance element against the destructive forces that are currently in dominance, right? And so this is really the context in which we show up at a market. You know, it's love, it's joy. It's in that moment, that individual tomato to that individual hand. But context of freeing the planet and creating sovereignty for communities through the demonstrated example of the ability to provide for oneself, the most basic thing you need in life. And then if you can do that, then you can educate your children, you can house yourself, you can start your own businesses. There's, you know, that seed of sovereignty is so key to, in my mind, for what people need to be whole.
I love your viewpoint, Kwabena, on that, because it starts with the food, you know, because whoever controls that, you know, what you feed, your body feeds your mind. And so when you have the control of what you're ingesting and what is providing you with nutrition, then you do control what happens in your life. And so that's one way to look at it. I love how you explained it with the liberation of food and, you know, having its high impact on us and, you know, how to build our communities up to a state of sufficiency. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing and the level of commitment that you have in getting the communities to that point. And the fact that you're, you know, already expanding just shows that your mind is really not limited to any certain areas, but, you know, like you say, the whole world of humanity, which is what, you know, we need to do. We need to look at the full spectrum or the full picture as we go about doing whatever we're going to be doing in this world. So thank you for that.
Right. But while staying rooted in your home community, right? Like that tension of reaching out, but also remaining true to, you know, where we're from. You know, it's just liberating to be able to just show up as an African and not necessarily have to wear it on your sleeve. You know, it's like, that's the power of my partnership, you know, with Tanya as well, because, you know, it's one thing to preach about something and to try to be a advocate for a change in behavior, but it's another thing to exemplify, you know, love, joy, happiness, mm-hmm. action in a way that everybody can identify with. You know, a couple, a man and a husband and wife who are living a lifestyle that's the so-called alternative lifestyle, but other than that, they look like they're just having a ball, right? And they're beautiful people, right? And they love to eat all kinds of, you know. So we're not just vegans, you know. We're not vegans at all. We're omnivores, but we're not eating some type of cuisine that it seems foreign and unreachable by people. We eat the same food everybody else eats. We just gear ourselves toward healthier food. We aspire to eat healthier food, and we do it. And when we incorporate food that we own, we grow ourselves into our diet choices. But we don't detach ourselves from, you know, the rest of regular folks, you know, by trying to live some unreachable type lifestyle, right? So that, to me, is really what I've enjoyed about working with Tanya, you know, is really just being able to be transparent about how this has become integrated into our life in a way that it's not something we work at. It is just who we are.
I love that. Absolutely. When you can be transparent and still be this role model couple. I think that's incredible. Because people, I mean, seriously, you know, because we believe that we need to match this or match that or appear to be like such and such, you know, in order to be successful. When we can show up in our authentic self, we're much more powerful in doing that because we give other people the freedom to also show up in their authentic self.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
So, Tanya,
yeah,
are you, is your background rooted in the wellness aspect, or was that heightened coming into the program with Kwabena, or...
Yeah, so the wellness components pretty much, yeah, is a part of, you know, my personal lifestyle that, you know, I pretty much, had been practicing, which, you know, we all practice that sort of thing every single day. But, you know, my wellness and then health and well-being was, you know, definitely a component that I, you know, definitely share with this relationship with Kwabena and then this marriage that, you know, I'm able to, incorporate ways of healing and, overall wellness around living a more holistic or natural kind of lifestyle, you know, as far as my health and wellness is concerned. But, you know, definitely those were some of the strengths that, you know, I do share in this relationship with Kwabena, that, you know, the health and wellness around holistic living, you know, is definitely a part of our lifestyle. But, yeah, definitely being able to circle in with this more when it comes to, to the foods, that a lot of, you know, our herbs and things that we can grow ourselves, you know, are able to help heal us, you know, again, you know, heal our bodies, heal, you know, some of our illnesses or whatever, you know, or just be well in general to consume foods that support our existence.
Right.
You know, we're all, you know, all aiming to live as long as we can, you know, as long as we can possibly live and as healthy as we can possibly live. So definitely, you know, bringing those components to our business model and definitely into our, you know, our personal lifestyle as well.
Great. Thank you, Tanya. So, Kwabena, is your program being open-armed, accepted by the different places that you, the different cities, the different areas that you've spoken with so far? Is it I guess what I'm asking, is it a tough sale, or are people willing and ready to make changes in their thinking about the future and about the sustainability of their communities?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a mixed bag again. You know, I think, like, the idea of it is popular, right? Like, you know, local food, urban agriculture, healthier living, organic, all these things have become extremely popular at a pop culture level. What becomes daunting is the actuality of the work, you know, the changing of ways of doing things, the investments that are that it takes, the discipline. There are a lot of barriers to the work because there isn't a lot of infrastructure to support it in society, either at the government level in terms of laws and regulations. Just to give you an example, you know, agriculture was, you know, displaced from city areas during the urbanization process in America and other places around the world, but certainly in America, in the United States, where, you know, over time, 40s, 50s, 60s, people began to associate agriculture exclusively with rural areas, whereas before, agriculture used to encircle metropolitan areas, you know, where there was farms right on the periphery of cities and sometimes right in the city as a normality, right? But then when zoning laws, you know, arose and the cities began to decide what could be put where on parcels of land, most cities left agriculture out of the code. And so by default, as most city planners will tell you, what's not in city municipal codes are by default illegal. So in a sense, you know, agriculture was made illegal. Growing food in the city limits was illegal in many cities because there was no code by which you can, you know, mark a piece of land as a land as acceptable land use, right? So that's a barrier for farmers who are operating within a vacuum of not land security, land use security, so they can be challenged by a neighbor and say, hey, having those chickens or having those goats next to my home is a nuisance, and they get you cited, and then, you know, you're forced to shut your farm down. So a lot of the work that needs to be done and is being done across cities is to reform those regulations and those laws to embrace growing food in this city again. And I would like to step back and hopefully answer your question on a little larger scale by just saying, why is this work important? You know, it's like, you know, sort of as a presumption that people will embrace it. Hey, it seems like a great idea. It looks lovely. It's wonderful. But why is it necessary? Why is it useful to grow food in the city? And for me, it starts around the way our world is currently structured at its fundamental economic level, meaning that countries and nations who have built the current world system that we live in, mostly the European Western nations, so-called Western nations, they've chosen to base our current civilization on one particular resource, and that is petroleum. We live in a oil-based world. And I won't really go into proving that concept. I'm just going to leave that with your listeners to do their own research on. But if you really think about it, you know, we know we drive cars that take gas and that affects our lives, but it affects every level of this civilization. This civilization is based, not only is it based on oil, it's based on cheap, accessible oil, which is why, you know, countries in the Middle East have to be dominated by these Western powers, because they need to keep this resource that they've designed the civilization on at an accessible, cheap level. So that is the fundamental reason why growing food in the city is essential, because our agricultural system assumes that there'll be cheap enough oil to ship food from California, Florida, or the Midwest, where most of our food is grown in the United States, to Atlanta, for instance, right? That there's going to be cheap oil to refrigerate the food while it travels, cheap oil to fuel the tractors that do the huge industrial farms, cheap petroleum to coat the apples and to coat the fruit with the wax that you make to look so pretty in the store, cheap oil to make the tires out of for the trucks that travel thousands of miles from where the food is grown, cheap labor in terms of the migrant workers that are used to pick the food in such a way that we can get it for the prices that we've accustomed to in the store. The whole system is predicated upon either cheap resources or oppressive labor practices, right? So by bringing mm-hmm. food closer to where people actually live, you have an opportunity to remove that dependency upon a resource that's not sustainable at a cheap and low access rate. And that is the core, like, dagger that Urban Ag puts into the heart of our current backward world system. That was a drop the mic moment.
You know, like, I'm sitting here like, okay. But I get it, though, you know, because looking at it from another perspective, from the health aspect, not that you weren't, you were bringing us full circle with how to truly look at what's happening in our world, is that when food comes from, you know, China or California or somewhere where it takes days and days to get to us, well, we know it's not fresh, and we know that it may contain or it may be crossed with another species that allows it to, like you say, shine forever and ever and never go bad. And so I believe that part of this shutdown has helped us to come to terms with some of that, and that too contributes to why we're looking at locally grown food, and it tastes better too, you know. So but I love what you're talking, sharing, and teaching us about the petroleum, the cheap aspect of our lives and lifestyle. I remember.
Yeah, I appreciate you balance it out like that, Sandy, because you're absolutely right. This does not compete with the benefits that you just outlined. Yes, they cascade from this structural change. You know, our lives on an individual and a community basis are structured and governed by these larger forces. And so it's helpful for me anyway, mm-hmm. in the way I do the work, to understand the context. It's also really important for me to, you know, to realize that, you know, because as a young revolutionary-minded, you know, young, enthusiastic Malcolm X wannabe type brother, you know, I was always thinking about mass movements and mass, you know, large transformations. You know, I wanted to do a Garveyite type thing. You know, I wanted to, you know, crush these systems with equal, you know, types of methods that they were oppressing us. You know, if they got big guns, let's get bigger guns, right? But there's this beautiful concept that got introduced to me, again, transcendent, right? It wasn't part of my ideological studies around race. It came from this economist named E.F. Schumacher. And he wrote this book that really changed my life when I read it, which is called Small is Beautiful, The Study of Economics as If People Mattered. I'm going to say that title again because I want your listeners to check it out. Small is Beautiful, A Study of Economics as If People Mattered. And this author, E.F. Schumacher, just argues in this book that the fundamental root of most injustice on the planet is not the intent of things, of governments, of even individuals, but of, you know, we think that, you know, the Third Reich was evil, you know, but he's saying that scale or the hugeness of things are themselves corrupting, meaning the size of corporations make them necessary to not think about individual persons that they may be affecting, right? So he says that anecdote to a world where size is a part of the problem is intentionally creating solutions that are designed and kept small on purpose so that they are accountable to the people that they're supposed to be serving, so that they are manageable by average people, and so that they're doable by average people. And that's what attracted me to Urban Ag. It was a combination of the health benefits, the earth stuff, but it was this idea that, hey, this is something that anybody can do, because, you know, starting a big conventional farm takes huge inputs of capital and labor and land ownership but anybody can grow food on their patio. Anybody can grow food in a community garden. Anybody can grow food at a school. Anybody can grow food at a senior center. So all these spaces are available to anybody, and then all of us can be part of the revolution. All of us can get control of our lives. And that, to me, was extremely revolutionary and has mm-hmm. captured my life work.
That's a beautiful inspiration and motivation. And thank you for sharing that, Kwabena, because it's important for us to think deeper, you know, than this surface mentality that we have, because a lot of the forces that are out want us to be dumbed down, you know, like let somebody else think for you because you've got more time to, you know, to look at more nonsense or, you know, not to to put your mind to use. And so I'm loving how you're expanding my thinking and my perception on what does this urban agriculture truly mean to the livelihoods, to the lifestyle, to the existence of our communities. I remember when I was a teenager and I was in Los Angeles in Watts to be exact, and my stepfather, who was from Mississippi, chose to teach us how to grow food in the backyard. And now I understand why he had it fenced off, you know, was because he probably needed to keep it protected from, you know, nosy people coming to see what's going on in the yard. But, so, you know, that unaccustomed to growing food in the backyard, it was always something that I enjoyed doing. And then we had chickens and, you know, all kinds of things. But that was his reality, and he was teaching us survival, because, you know, as long as you grow on your own food and you got your own chickens to lay the eggs and eat and things like that, you're really not that dependent upon other people. And so, yeah, it's a great balance, a great combination to think at on all sides of how this thing is really moving.
Absolutely. You know, we all can participate, and it's always important to meet people where they are, you know. So as I was courting Tanya, you know, I didn't try to beat her over the head with, you know, the whole expanse of what I've been working on for the many years before we started dating. But I just, you know, began feeding it to her in a way that she could meet it. So one of the first gifts I gave her was a patio garden box, you know, so she can just start her own garden that she controlled, that she, could equally, you know, take pride in, along with the larger gardens that I was working on, you know. And so so she, you know, embraced that and felt it was nice. And then, you know, then that has grown to where she's out there starting her own seeds now, you know. And this is like a year, you know, from when she had never grown anything, you know, in her life. So it's just, you know, it's having that willingness to you know, not be ideological about it, you know, and just really, again, just share the lifestyle, right? And just, yeah. And then let it go by osmosis, you know, and don't be preaching, hit people over the head with stuff, but just say, hey, this is working for me, and this is what it does for me, and maybe you'll like it, you know, and see where that goes.
That's cool. What you say, Tanya?
Yes, absolutely. And then, you know, again, you know, getting back to, you know, our company and our business around being able to share, you know, this with others so that they too can connect, you know, these things with their family members or their business, you know, if they're more of a larger scale client, you know, type of client. But being able to share, you know, with others how easy it is to be able to take control of sorts of this particular resource in you know, in your life, your business, or whatever have you. So definitely, you know, being able to bring all the components in align, you know, with someone, you know, a partner who has the same types of ideals and mindsets around these important areas of our lives, you know, makes it, you know, so easy to work with Kwabena and just have learned so much. He's such a great resource, you know, wealth of knowledge, you know, as they say, and being able to have, you know, him as a resource, you know, when I do move into these endeavors of even, you know, doing community work, you know, interacting with others and finding out, you know, what some of their needs or, you know, things are around, you know, definitely the food space, but, you know, what we offer as a company and a brand.
Right, right. Now, you know, I just find it really interesting, and I see it, though. You know, I just, like I said, it's from a whole different perspective as food is being revolutionary, which it is. You know,
sure.
When we stop depending on other folks and we start doing it ourselves, then we are revolting against this standardized view that, you know, the larger corporations would want us to keep and maintain. So I love it. I love it. I love that whole thought process.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Most of us have never experienced true independence from, you know, the things that are made available to us by society. You know, we're taught to believe that everything of importance comes from someplace else. And our job is, you know, our role is to go to a job and earn the dollars to go and purchase the things that we must need, right? And so when you break that cycle with one element, it doesn't have to be food, honestly, Sandy. I believe it could be, I believe the same way about the homeschooling movement where parents are taking control of their children's education. I believe the same thing about the liberation theology movement where our clergy and our religious leaders are taking control of the way we think about spirituality. I feel the same way about the housing movement where we're building tiny houses and we're retrofitting shipping containers and just breaking the whole industry in which we have to wait for somebody else to build our homes, the very things we need for basic human life. And so, but by choosing food, though, this very powerful, beautiful thing, you know, the you know, we think about food in terms of the taste, the color, the shape, but in terms of a functionality, what we're really talking about is an energy source for the human body, right? And and this energy source, in terms of the person who creates it, you know, what is a farmer? You know, a farmer really is an energy worker, right? My job is to manipulate earth and the physical space in which I'm working to capture solar power from the sun and to transform it into available molecules, you know, carbohydrates and other things that the human body, you know, because even if you're talking about meat, these animals have consumed grasses and stuff that were captured in the sun. So we're all energy beings, you know, solar beings, you know, and this food is really just a methodology, a delivery system for the sun, right? And so when you break it down like that, you know, you really have to understand the essential role. Like, no one would question the necessity of oil for human life to heat our homes, to move our vehicles around. But we take for granted these farmers, you know, whose job is to work with the sun to keep humans alive, right? And that is a sacred role. And I approach it with that kind of reverence, right? And I trust, you know, God and nature to give me the knowledge and the understanding necessary to be successful. Like, I've studied agriculture. I went to Tuskegee University. I went to Clemson University, and I have taken courses at conferences. But honestly, most of what I know about the land has been I've learned by being with the land. You know, there is an inheritance out there if you just open yourself to receive it. There's just information about how, you know, the pest will work, how diseases will work and not work, how I need to create physical structures, you know. And then I've also learned that there's an artist in me, so that my farms and gardens don't typically just be productive. They are just attractive, right, because I'm naturally, you know, attuned toward beauty, which is why I married Tanya.
Oh, she is beautiful.
Thank you, Sandy.
Absolutely. So it all works together, and I just really believe strongly in this idea of being in control. And you know, like I said, this, and we, and, you know, the word small is beautiful. I want to leave with your listeners. And the other word I would love to leave, you know, in terms of a higher thinking, is the word sovereignty. You know, just a meditation on that word. We've been caught up with liberation for many, many generations. You know, from, you know, emancipation, for, you know, surviving Jim Crow, into the civil rights struggle. It's been about liberation, black power. But as the world gets complicated for the black person, you know, whereas we can achieve things, like if we want to be honest with ourselves, we can do things now that we can never do before. We're still being shot by police. We're still being discriminated against. All that's real. But we're also owning things. We're controlling things. We have access to travel that we, you know, there's so many things that we can do, right? So then the question is, what do we do with our power? And the focus to me is, yeah, we still need to liberate ourselves against some structures, but really we're not being held back by anything sometimes but ourselves. And so the word for me is sovereignty, sovereignty. Mm-hmm. You know, the supreme power over our own selves, mm-hmm. our autonomy. You know, just sitting with that and allowing our third eye to tell us what we should do to be sovereign, right? Because that's what our ancestors were on the Nile Valley. They were not liberating themselves from anybody. They were building mm-hmm. their own world, and they were doing it from a position of sovereignty. Thanks to the banks of the Nile that delivered fertility to that were the roots of that ancient civilization, right? So we're always coming back to agriculture, because agriculture is rooted in the word culture, which is the way people live. And so our food informs who we are as humans. They tell us, they give us our, it gives us our identity at a DNA level. It is who we are. It is the body of what we are. We are composed of what we eat. So what we eat mm-hmm. and how we get it is so important. It is a spiritual question. It is an existential necessity for us to reckon with.
All right, Professor. I love how you deliver your message, Robin. I mean, you just, because you're so passionate about what you're doing, and you, there's no question in you as to how you need to deliver the message so that people get it, they understand it, and they can then allow it to inspire them to further educate themselves, or to, like you say, sit in meditation and let that third eye reveal the truth to them. So let me just, because we're about 20 so minutes away from the end of the show, for those of you that are listening that would have a message, a question, a comment, concern about what you're hearing here on the show tonight, please feel free to call us at 516-531-9819 and push 1 on your dial to allow to alert us, rather, that you would like to speak live on air with us. Again, that's 516-531-9819. And otherwise, we'll just continue on with the discussion. But feel free to call and chat live on air with us, with Quavana and Tanya, who are just outstanding with the knowledge that they're sharing, the food for thought that they're giving us to perhaps think outside the box that many of us are not accustomed to doing. But this is about individual growth and empowering the community, empowering our families, and empowering the world. We're talking about food. We're talking about sovereignty. We're talking about small is beautiful. We're talking about the source of food and just everything that goes into this community life that we have the gift to share with each other, and that we've been gifted with from the Most High. So thank you for that. And again, that's 516-531-9819. And just press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. All right, Ms. Tanya.
Yes, absolutely. So I just wanted to share more about Kwabena's mention of the word sovereignty and just really shifting the conversation, you know, from more so around growing food and things like that, around, the, you know, sharing the idea of creating local economies for ourselves, you know, again, becoming more independent as communities or cities or, you know, however, you know, we'll break it all down, but just becoming more, again, independent of depending on, you know, another type of currency, because there's all types of currencies, you know, in the world, as we know. And, you know, who's to say that, you know, creating our own currency is, you know, is something that is not doable, for example. So really, you know, shifting folks, you know, this is one of the kind of ideals that we share within our brand around, you know, sharing knowledge around becoming more sustainable by creating our own inner local economy. And we can definitely do that sort of thing with growing our own foods, for example, on the land that we have at, you know, at our homes or in our communities, and, you know, even partnering with the state and the counties that we live in to see what they're doing with the land and, you know, initiating some of these types of projects within our urban communities. But, you know, I was talking to Kwabena earlier about this conversation, you know, can be spoken to anywhere around the world. You know, you could have the mm-hmm. same kind of conversation with someone, you know, anywhere in the world regarding food, accessibility to food, and, you know, definitely sustainability around food. And, you know, I keep using the word sustainability because, you know, for me, that was one of the key points that came out of, you know, the year 2020, you know, last year and all with everything that was going on. You know, that's just, you know, without, you know, the power and the source of our energy, you know, that we were talking about a little earlier is around this thing called food. But, you know, yeah. How can we then become more independent from, mm-hmm. you know, depending on the dollar bill, for example, to be able to purchase food and create local economies that, for when you come to, you know, we live in the city of Stonecrest, for example, so that when you come to the city of Stonecrest that you're able to bring this currency to our businesses within our community to be able to, you know, purchase whatever we're backing the currency with, for example. So, you know, one example would be something like sweet potatoes, for example, would be a strong crop that you can back a currency with, you know, because, you know, you can grow it frequently and it's a sustainable crop that, you know, when someone comes to the city of Stonecrest, for example, that they can bring that currency just to, you know, circling the money within our communities is really the name of the game,
right.
As far as, you know, creating our own inner economy. So keeping our communities, you know, circulating the money within, growing the food within, you know, to be able to, you know, and taking care of the land within our communities and being able to, you know, create our own local economies that are valuable to us and what the value that we put behind it as a community. Because you can put value behind anything. You pick up any piece of paper and say this is worth $100, you know, as the dollar bill is. And, you know, everybody wants a copy of it. So, again, you know, just really, you know, thinking more future, around creating sustainability, the food, of course, but how can we make this even more, you know, take it to another level around developing our own local currency and economy.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to add a little bit to that. You know, we really love the sweet potato. You know, she's trying, like part of it is, you know, a sort of romanticism around Dr. George Washington Carver and his advocacy. You know, a lot of people associate Dr. Carver with peanuts, right? You know, there's some mythology around that, but his real crop that he really did a lot of research on was the sweet potato. And his advocacy had to do with the ability of the sweet potato to enrich the soil for Southern farmers, you know, that he was trying to do research for, but also just its many uses. And it's an incredible plant. And so we have this idea that because, you know, in urban agriculture, a lot of what we do is, you know, is small, and that's a beautiful thing, right? But the irony is we also needed to scale up to a certain level to have a larger impact on even our small communities, right? Like, we can't be too small where it's an insignificant factor in making a difference in the way our people live. So we like the sweet potato because it's a crop that has two harvests, you know, the leaves and the actual potato in the ground. So a lot of people don't know you can eat the leaves of the plant, which are equally nutritious as the potato. But it's also beautiful that the potato stores, you know, for up to a year under the right temperature and humidity conditions, right? So this is what Tanya was referring to when she was saying backing in local currency with sweet potato, because we believe that because it can be stored like that, we can use that as a local commodity that can be like a Fort Knox for the wealth in a community, where we conspire for all the urban farmers to grow a certain amount of sweet potatoes, and we store them in a central facility, and then we tag the value of our local currency. And if we're confusing people with this term local currency, please just, you know, Google it. It's a concept that has been proven to work in many communities around the country, most spectacularly in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Western Massachusetts. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, and there's a town out there that created their own currency called the Berkshire. The Berkshires are the mountains that are in the area. So the Berkshire is a play off the mountain range, and they make their own money. It's not illegal to make your own money. It's just illegal to counterfeit the U.S. dollar, but you can make your own currency, which is often sometimes even companies make their own scripts, like mining companies often make their own scripts so that their workers can buy stuff from the company's store. So this is real community building science around this idea. And why would you want a local currency? Because you can track how that script is being spent, and you can see how it circulates into the businesses in your community, you know, and then when it leaves, it has to convert back into, you know, a conventional U.S. dollar. So that exchange rate can be set by your local community. And, you know, we don't try to get too deep off. That's another whole subject. But we do believe that food is a foundation for some real economic justice. You know, if folks are willing to apply themselves, you know, some more of these more sophisticated ideas. And it's these things that we feel like it's our job to bring to the table as subject matter experts in our firm, is to see these ideas in the communities, to model them, to experiment with them. And that's what we're about and actively doing right now. We planted over 3,000 to 4,000 sweet potato slips or plants this season. And we did like 1,500 last year. So every year we're stepping it up and just really showing that this is something we can do at an incredible scale. And the soil is richer after planting them. And, you know, we have them for all into the winter. We still have sweet potatoes we have from last year. We just finished cooking some sweet potatoes from last summer, you know, because you can store them, you know, and keep them that long.
The language that you two are sharing is about possibility and expansion in your thoughts and your reality. And that is so beneficial, especially right now as we're in a point in time where we're rewriting or defining what we would have our reality to look like. And we're actually very blessed in this time, because we were so caught up in being force-fed what to believe, what to do, what to eat, like you were saying, Kwabena, earlier, you know, like going to work, and most times it was just doing something that you really didn't want to do, but, you know, that was the reality of it. And so now that we've had a little break from that, and we've been able to hopefully develop a new way of thinking, So what the two of you now are bringing to the forefront is possibility thinking, you know, like, okay, let's do this. Let's create our local currency, our local script. Let's create these new economies that are something that we can establish what the ground rules are. So I'm just loving the whole language that you guys are using, and especially coming from a Black nationalist point of view, as you called yourself in the beginning, Kwabena. And I'm loving the whole originality of the thought. And it may not seem to you, you know, that is what you're doing, what you're talking about, but it is, because it's truly outside what our normal reaction and what our normal thinking is about what's possible for us to experience in this lifetime, especially here in the Western world.
Ashe.
Yeah. Certainly appreciate you. Whew. Okay. So let's tell the audience how they can contact you, how they can support you, how they can find out more about the programs that you offer. Our audience is international, so however you choose to share that information would be helpful.
Yeah, so we actually have a really robust Facebook page that we do most of our public-facing communication with. And so we encourage people to visit or search for North America Food and Farm on Facebook and connect with us there. We're consistently sharing our journey. We have several pages. So let me just explain a little bit the structure. You mentioned a couple of the entities. And so, you know, the Food and Farm concept is a approach to doing the work that we've kind of like iterated in different ways. And so starting with the Atlanta enterprise in 2011, it was targeted just on the metro Atlanta area. We believe in a local focus. And so the North America entity is really an umbrella corporation that's designed to help seed a similar local things in other cities and other localities, right? So again, we mentioned you can find us at Birmingham Food and Farm. You can find us at Boston Food and Farm in terms of Facebook pages as well. And then I have my own Facebook page, Kwabena Citizen Farmer, which is another thing I'd love to come back and talk about one time, is the political work around food, which is hugely important. But I know we don't have time to do that tonight. But I consider myself a public figure, so I'm always willing to share my phone, you know, so folks can call me at 678-499-0309. I prefer text messages to schedule a time to talk, because we have a very busy schedule, as Sandy has shared. But I am open to contact at 678-499-0309. And then our emails are similar. So mine is Kwabena, K-W-A-B as in boy, E-N-A, at the acronym of our company is NAFTU. So it's Kwabena at NAFTU, A-N-A-F, the number 2, and then PBC, Paul Ball Cat. So NAFTU, PBC, and then .farm, F-A-R-M. So it's Kwabena at NAFTU, PBC, .farm, and then for Tanya, it's the same extension with Tanya, T-A-U-N-I-A, for Tanya at NAF2PBC.com. So in terms of supporting those, though, I would love to just share that one of our latest clients is that we're going to be helping a lovely small business in the historic Western neighborhood of Southwest Atlanta called Wadada Healthy Market and Juice Bar. We just signed a deal with them that we're going to be helping them build a grocery component to their natural store that sources primarily from Black urban farmers and other local farmers, And so we love for people to come to Wadada and say, hey, we heard, you know, NASCAR's going to be bringing some local fresh food here. Where is that? You know, and we're here to buy it, right? And so we love to we're here to support our clients, you know. And so we also want people to go eat at Sweet Potato Cafe in downtown Stone Mountain Village. Our longtime clients that we built a people talk about farm to table, so we helped this restaurant create a farm at table concept where food from the menu is grown right on the campus of the restaurant. So we manage a market garden around that restaurant. So that's Sweet Potato Cafe in downtown Stone Mountain Village, where Chef Karen and her husband Daryl Patton are a black couple that own that mom and pop restaurant.
Downtown Stone Mountain.
Yeah, right off that's, Main Street on Miller Drive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct. And
I'm
then
writing it down.
Sure. Yeah, we also have appearances at two farmers markets so far this summer. One of them is the downtown Lithonia Farmers Market on Saturdays from 12 to 4, and then also the Stone Mountain Village Farmers Market, which we had one today, as a matter of fact, 2 days from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. We have different stuff each week. If you want to just come out and check out some food or just come out to say hello, we're always glad to meet new people, so that would be exciting. And, so that's also where you can get in touch with us.
Okay, so Saturday was 12 to 4 at the downtown Lithonia Farmer Market. And where were you today from 4 to 7?
Sure, absolutely, at the Stone Mountain Farmers, the Stone Mountain Village Farmers Market in downtown Stone Mountain. So it's right there in the village region of, as you're in that Stone Mountain area.
Okay. I'm taking notes.
Awesome. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. That was, so Kwamina, you kind of dropped a little bit and said you didn't really want, you didn't have time to really get fully into it. What was that you were, about to say to us?
Well, yeah, so, you know, I have a real strong conviction around politics and the electoral system that we need to embrace, you know, and this is, you know, really from my learning from Malcolm X on up, right? That, you know, because a lot of times with revolutionary black nationalists, what have you, we kind of have a disdain for electoral politics, you know, we're not going to, you know, like we're going to step over that step and we're just going to go straight to freeing ourselves, you know, let's get some land, free land. I'm all about that, but I really believe that we have some of us who have the temperament and the willingness to go into this sphere, we have an obligation to take seriously going into the political system as opposed to, like, marching and protesting the actions of elected officials from the president on down. You know, we need to put ourselves in these offices. And so I have this concept called food citizens, you know, a movement that I'm working on starting where average people, citizens, voters, think of themselves first from their gastric center, right? As human beings, that ought to be the top of our political issue list. What is our local government doing about our stomachs and the needs of our stomachs, right? So these food citizens would elect ideally farmer citizens, you know, people who have a relationship with producing that food, who get into office and make policy decisions that relate to shifting our society toward a more sustainable relationship with food. And I am putting myself in the position to be one of those folks. So I'll be running for office here locally soon. And so I have a branding around that called Farmer Citizen that I've been working on for a while, and I'm going to be putting in action because, you know, I turned 50 last November, and I really feel like that it's my turn at this stage in my life as a pre-elder, as I call myself, to get into a position to really influence what's happening at a macro level. But I'm not really interested in, you know, like, you know, higher level offices, you know, beyond counties or anything like that, but anything like county, city, city council, mayor's office, those are spaces that we need, and school boards, we need to take over those spaces. Because the reactionary forces in society are targeting those spaces. They're the ones who are controlling the districting at the state house level. They're creating the context in which we are protesting and struggling against. And we have to, we're spending all that energy on something that we could put ourselves into those seats and be setting the agenda, or at least contesting those other forces in those, what do you call them, legislatures and what have you. And so that's something that, you know, I think is another whole conversation. It has so many different layers to it. But certainly in a city like Stonecrest, where it's 90% black, there is no reason that policing should look the same here. There's no reason that economics should look the same in Stonecrest or South Fulton, these two cities that were just created in the past 3 years by the Georgia legislature that are over 90% black. They have huge economic potential in them. What are we doing? Why aren't we making them the new Timbuktu, the new Nile Valley? You know, there's no reason. If we did it before, if we really believe that we were the founders of civilization, show up now. More, our people need it now. We don't need any more history lessons. We need contemporary examples of our true value and potential as black people.
Mm-hmm. Love it, love it. Well, we'll really need to. We will, not me. We will be bringing you back. When you're ready to talk about that political side of it. I know that's something that I normally have a tendency to avoid, but like you say, you know, it's the laws that have turned our cities into places where you're not legally able to grow food on your own property. You know, you can put up something that's called grass or lawn or that doesn't serve any purpose other than supposedly looking beautiful out there, but it's not feeding you. It can't feed you. And so I appreciate that work in politics, because that is something that we need to address, and that's where we've been lacking for a long time now. So I would love to have you back and to have that conversation with you so that you can help educate us on that as well, because it's very much needed in our communities. I appreciate you for bringing it up and for taking an interest in wanting to be actively involved in that.
Ashe, and I thank you, Sandy, for your spiritual leadership. Just to, you know, turn the tables on the host a little bit, you know, when you open this with that reflection, that had a big impact and relevancy to me. I'm in a situation where I have to decide about revenge or retaliation, right? And it's like, I was like, no, she didn't come on here and speak right to my situation. I don't want to hear nothing about, you know, taking a higher path. I'm ready to get some get back, you know. And but no, I've been reading when I can, you know, your post, your blog posts about your reflections, and just the fact that you're consistently putting it out here. When I see you on social media, it just you're very posting God's groceries or the other group sites, and so I said, oh, it just makes me say, okay, what is Sandy, you know, challenging me to think about at a higher plane today, right? You know, because like every day it's a slog, right? We get drifting into our lower nature every day, but it's like you're just out here representing. Even when I first saw you in real life, at this black market. You said we might have met at the Mapleton, but I know for certain you walked up to our table at the Black Market and invited us to the show.
Right.
You had one of those little like Yahshua halos behind your head when you walked up there, because you got that big old grin, and you just really carry that spiritual presence and priestessness with you as you go. So thank you for that, and as well as of course having us here tonight.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and we are out of time. It's right on time, so we're not out of time, but right up to the last second of the show, and it's been such an honor and such a pleasure to talk with Tanya and Kwabena and Kuro. I needed to get that the wife goes first, the queen goes first, and followed by the king.
Sure.
And you guys have really lit up our thinking, our outside the box possibility, new awareness. And so I appreciate you totally from all of everything that I have for being young, being, what do you say, pre-elder?
Yeah, pre-elder.
Yeah, pre-elder. I like that. I like that. And we appreciate you both. And I'm looking forward, Kwabena, to you coming back on the show and let's talk some politics. That one I'm a little leery about, but I know it's needed. So I'm going to put on my big girl pants and say, come on back. Let's talk about it.
All right. That sounds like a deal.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you next week with another outstanding guest, much like we had tonight. And be safe, stay strong, and we love you and we appreciate you. Good night.
Good night.